Welcome, everyone. Good morning. I want you to listen to this. I want you to listen to this. And I want all of you to think about what part you've had to play in this. I always tell you, this is not a one-man show. I want to take the time to read this to you, to convince you of that, and to remind you the significance of the impact that you have and you continue to have on your own community. There's a reason why when the Buddha established the Buddha Sasana, he spoke of three noble gems: the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. The Sangha is not merely the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, but it also encompasses the upasakas and upasikas. You are looking at a bhikkhu, and I'm looking at the upasakas and upasikas. Dear Venerable Thero, dated the 21st of January, it is with great appreciation that we wish to express our thankfulness to you and everyone at the monastery who has contributed to shaping this significant moment in our lives. Your teachings over the past 2 months, so they've only been coming for the last 2 months, unlike most of you who have been coming along for the last, what, 6-7 months. So this is an impact that has been had only over the last 2 months. Your teachings of the past 2 months have left an indelible mark on our hearts. On the auspicious morning of January the 18th, our family welcomed a precious addition. So what is this family they speak of? I'm looking at them. The journey through childbirth felt remarkably smooth, and we attribute this ease to the blessings bestowed upon us by you, the monastery, comma, and the supportive community of Rajagiriyans. Your benevolent influence, along with the positive energy shared by all, provided an invaluable sense of comfort. While we eagerly anticipate the opportunity to attend your sermons in person once again, we find solace in the online gatherings every Sunday, shared graciously within the group. So this would have been someone who got to know about these talks because someone here would have invited them. That's why when we do a merit transfer, we always say, anyone who makes an effort to disseminate the Buddha's teaching, to propagate the Buddha's teaching, to promulgate the Buddha's teaching, either in delivering the sermons or by sharing them out with others, they are all playing their part for the Buddha Sasana. This is one mother who shares her testimony to that. Your care and guidance have been a beacon of light for our family. As we embark on this new chapter, this is the best part. As we embark on this new chapter, with our little one, yet to be officially named. Oh, I love to read this part. We hold a hopeful vision that she will play a significant role in the Sasana, treading the path towards the supreme bliss of Nibbana one day. What more can a mother wish for her child? Isn't this what every mother should have the opportunity to before they bear a child? As she was with child, She used to come along to the talks. She sat amongst you. She allowed the Dhamma to grace her, to bless her. She was in the community of the Sangha. I can only imagine how much good that must have done to the child that she bore. Because it is not just the blessings that the child receives while she is in the mother's womb. But now this child is coming into the world to be cared for, to be protected by, and to be loved by two parents who have found a good footing in the Dhamma. So they are giving the child, they're going to be giving the child a fantastic foundation, aren't they? Wishing you and the entire community an abundance of positive energy and gratitude. Thank you for taking the time to read this note with heartfelt metta. And they've included their names in here. What do you think about yourselves? This is the community that you have managed to foster. This is what is needed, ladies and gentlemen, for Nibbana to take place. If the Buddha could do it all by himself, he would have done it, wouldn't he? He is the all-knowing one. He was never in any doubt that to spread the teaching, to help people realize Nibbana, to help people find solace in the Dhamma, it is not a lone task that he can do all by himself. The Dhamma is to be spread and to be inculcated in people's hearts by the Sangha. Once again, I remind you, it is not just the bhikkhus and the bhikkhunis, but the upasakas and the upasikas. The upasakas and the upasikas are those who take refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. What is taking refuge? Whenever you have a mental vexation, whenever you have a distress, an agony, despair, and as well as joy that is not based in unconditional happiness, you resort to the Dhamma. You realize that the Dhamma is the only teacher. The Dhamma is the only refuge. So you know, you stop finding answers, looking for answers outside the remit of the Dhamma. You commit yourself to finding answers in the truth. That is what elevates you to the status of an upasaka and an upasika. It is not something that comes with old age. Although most people think an upasaka is a name for an elderly person. It is not so. Elderly, yes. Well, what is the meaning of the word thera? That also means elderly. Theravada, the doctrine, the teaching of the elders. These elders are those who we refer to as people who have matured mentally. They have aspired to a higher truth. And in that virtue, by virtue of that, they're elders. So yes, by virtue of that, you are elderly. Because you are mature. You're mature. Your maturity is in the way in which you look for answers to the problems that affect you and challenge you in life. So once again, I want to congratulate all of you. Because it would have taken some thinking to craft a note like that. She could have just thanked the Swami Nuhansi, couldn't she? For 2 months. That's all. I mean, in the 2 months, she would probably have spoken more to you than she did to me. How much time do you get to come and talk to me at the end of a sermon? A few words. Most of the time, you just come, pay your respects, and you walk away. But she would have certainly felt your love, your affection, your kindness, your gracefulness, and all that. I want all of you to be walking adverts for the Buddha Sasana, ladies and gentlemen. Before you deliver the message, you should be the message. Because then people look at you and they ask you. I've said this to you before. The reason that we have a Sariputta Thera in the Sasana today is because there was one monk by the name of Asaji, who was a great elder, a great arahant at the time. He was witnessed roaming the surface of the earth so gracefully by a certain someone called Upatissa, who was Sariputta, Venerable Sariputta before he became the Venerable. And upon approaching the Venerable Asaji, he asked him, what did he ask him? Venerable sir, you look so graceful. You look so calm and so collected, so tranquil. What is your teaching? How is it you have managed to achieve such a state of tranquility? Who is your teacher? That's the question asked. You know the biggest respect you can pay me? Shall I give it to you straight? Conduct yourselves in such a manner so that someone approaches you, a stranger approaches you, if at all possible, and asks you, "Madam, who's your teacher?" Your conduct is so graceful. Your manner is so compassionate. You're so kind and so gentle and so generous. I'm not like that, but I certainly see you are, and I get the feeling that I can also aspire to be someone like you. How do I learn how to do that? If you can become someone like that, there is no greater respect, reward, or veneration that you can offer me today and tomorrow. That is why to this day, we still make our veneration to the Buddha. He is not even among us today, but we still do. You know why? Whenever we have to make the trip from the other hall here, the organizers always ask me, "Venerable sir, do you wish to be driven to the hall or would you like to walk?" So I always say, "Sir, as you wish, it is your wish." But they know that I do have a preference here. My preference is to walk. My preference is to walk for one reason alone, ladies and gentlemen. No, not for exercise. Because at the monastery, we have 30 acres of land, and walking is all I do. When I have to get from one place to the other. So I get plenty of walking exercise there. The reason I love to walk, wherever I can, whenever I can, is so that I can carry the message of the Buddha. You know, just today, as I was walking, I saw a fragment of something on the floor. I think it was a ruler, plastic ruler or something, a fragment on the ground. So as soon as I saw that, I stopped. And then I asked one of the gentlemen to say, "Sir, I think we had better pick that up, because if someone steps on it, it might hurt them. It might cut and injure them." So now there were a few other children around as well. So this gentleman, he came and picked that up, and watching him do that were these children. And you know what they did from there on? See, what an example you can set on your children and others who are watching you. What the children did after that was, they walked ahead of me, not just picking up fragments of bits and pieces thrown around, but every single leaf they could find, just clearing the path for Swami Nuhanse to come here. So that the path was cleared and there were no obstacles. Every leaf they could find, they picked it up. You know how much merits they would have earned just by doing that? I could not have done that if I took the car here. That's what I want to leave in this world. A changed people. A transformed people. You know, today you bring your children here. You know, they may sit down, what, for 10 minutes, maybe half an hour, maybe an hour. That's the most they can handle. Perhaps after that they have to leave. But I see sometimes, you know, there are young children, like maybe one third your age. They come and they sit down and they listen to the sermon and they even forget to blink. I don't know whether it is the Dhamma that mesmerizes them or maybe their parents have promised them, "I'll give you a sweet when you get back home. Just stay awake for the sermon, all right?" I don't think it's the latter though. Now these are children who were born with a very special purpose. Otherwise, how can a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old come and sit in a sermon for 2.5 hours long? It's 2.5 hours when I'm good, right? I'm not always good when I lose track of time, but they still remain in the talk. How do you get a 7-year-old to sit in a 2.5-hour sermon, madam, I ask you? When you and I were younger, do you think we'd have managed that? Think about most of the other children out there. Even if you take them to a sermon, you'll have to give them something into their hands so that they can play Pokemon or Angry Birds or something while the Swaminarayana tries to convince them that samsara is a cesspit. But these children, they're very special. Very special indeed. Why so? Because they were born to you as parents. They were born to you. You are very special. Through you, you have given them the ambrosia of the Dhamma. You have given them every opportunity to aspire to a greatness that would never have been possible by getting a good education. This is the indelible mark that I wish to leave in this world. A changed people. And this is a testimony of that. So you have certainly left your mark not only on a mother, but an unborn child at the time. At the time they were here. Two people were here, but you only saw one. But you were still having an impact on a child that was yet to come into this world. And now she is here. So I'm sure one of these days, the mother will bring her child. The youngest in the audience will then be only a few months old. Very special. You know, change is happening, ladies and gentlemen. Change is happening. I don't believe that humanity is a lost cause. Because there's no point just finger-pointing at others and, you know, blaming the system, the economy, the politicians, the country, and the way it's run. What's the point? We can always blame. Blame is so easy to do, isn't it? You just need to sit yourself down on a couch, put your feet up on a table in front of you, and just, you know, start pointing your fingers. Which on the television, it makes life easy. You know, makes it a whole lot easier once you've got the TV on. But to switch off the television, to get yourself up off your seat, get yourself into a state of mindfulness, into a state of compassion and loving kindness. Open your heart to the Buddha. The other day someone asked me, "Venerable sir, where was the Buddha born?" Because there's apparently a lot of hoo-ha going on about that. People have lots of different opinions about this. So whenever you see a monk these days, that's one of the first questions that get asked. Where was the Buddha born? Depending on what answer you give, I shall decide whether I come back to these sermons or not. To that extent, can you imagine? I said, "Madam, the Buddha was born here." That's where the Buddha was born. What does it matter where the Buddha was born if the Buddha is not born here in your heart? If through you people don't get to see who the Buddha was, If through you people don't get to experience his graciousness, his kindness, his gentleness, his infinite compassion, his boundless mercifulness, then what good is it to just bear a fact in mind as to where the Buddha was born? Whether he was born under the Bodhi tree or an apple tree, what difference does it make? Some truths were discovered under an apple tree, weren't they? And other truths were discovered under the Bodhi tree. Where did you discover your truth? That's what we're here for. So I want you all to recognize the part that you have played thus far, in less than a year, to bring you all together like this as a community. And I'm informed that next week when we have our meditation retreat, some of you have got together and you've organized it so wonderfully and perfectly, such that you can just come into the school and park your vehicles and transport will be arranged to get you to the monastery. So I don't know who's organizing it, but I know someone has to. Whether you're all doing it together or someone's doing it on your behalf, I don't know. But whoever is doing it, whether it's one person or the lot of you, always bear in mind that the purpose behind this is ultimate bliss, unconditional happiness. What you give is what you get, ladies and gentlemen. Never forget that. If there's one principle I wish for you to hold true in your life, it is that principle. This principle will guide you to the end. What you give is what you get. This is what you have given. And the mother speaks on behalf of her new child, a newborn child, thanking you for the impact and the influence that you have had on her life. Well done, all of you. All of this has been made possible to us because of the Buddha. Today we are able to live full lives. Lives where we don't have to have any regrets at the end of it. Most people die with regrets. Unfulfilled, incomplete, undone business. But we can die one day happy, content, fulfilled. Because we have the great master. He whose compassion is unparalleled. He whose wisdom is limitless. He who committed himself his entire life for the well-being of all mankind. It mattered not to him what religion they were. The first discourse delivered by the Buddha were delivered to Buddhists. Yes or no? Of course not. In fact, most of the discourses given by the Buddha were given to non-Buddhists. So it would be wrong to say that Buddhism is for Buddhists. If you take our teacher's guidance, then it would be wrong to say that that Buddhism is for Buddhists. So who is Buddhism for? Anyone who wishes to save themselves from suffering, that is who Buddhism is for. So reminding ourselves of his greatness, his compassion, his effort, all that put into spreading the word of Dhamma, introducing us to his own teacher, so that we could aspire and reach the same magnificent heights as he did. I can't think of many other teachers who taught a philosophy that would enable and help their students to reach the same status as the teacher himself. I can't think of many teachers who've done that. I want you to think about this as well. So let us bring our palms together in veneration of his holy name, our great master, our teacher and our guide. May this veneration be to the purpose that he came into this world for. Even as we perish and pass away, may that purpose live long, so that many others can walk in those footsteps and experience the same bliss as he and those of us who walk on that path experience now and to our very end. Let us also remind ourselves that this is a pledge that we take to commit ourselves to the Noble Triple Gem on our path to ultimate bliss and beyond.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
So I feel now that you're all steady on this path. I was not expecting so many people to sign up, in fact. So we said, just have one sheet of paper. That's what we'd come in with. And then, as it happened, someone in the audience decided that one sheet of paper was not going to be enough. And they kindly, apparently, ran to one of the there's shops where they give you copies of, give you photocopies, and they got, came back with 3 or 4 sheets. And at the end, we were glad that we'd done that. I think 115 odd names have been put down. We were expecting about 5. Incredible. Incredible. You know, giving up half your Sunday is one thing, but to give up a whole Sunday must mean that you must feel that there's something here that you've got something out of, and it's beginning to have an impact in your lives. Otherwise, you know, you won't do it for this long. 1 day, 2 days, a week, 3 weeks, a month, you know, you trial it. But to keep coming back, I feel you are beginning to understand who the Buddha is. That's all I want to do, really. To introduce you to my teacher, and to his teacher, and to his teacher, and to his teacher, and connect the dots, and to his teacher, the great teacher. I want you to experience this bliss that I always speak to you about, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing else matters. When you know well and truly that everything that people do in this world is for that purpose and that purpose alone. There's not a single thing you've done in your entire lives. However many years of life you've been alive, not a single thing you've done in your entire lives. When asked the question why you did it, you do not answer back to me, "It is because I wanted to be happy," Swami no answer. "There was a suffering in my heart and I wanted to be free of it. And I wanted to achieve happiness." This is the only reason that we do anything. Sometimes you might think, well, aren't there times we do things for others, even when it is painful for us? Sometimes, you know, we take the short end of the stick because we know that it is going to be good for someone else. Yes, agreed. But then again, that's what makes you happy. That's what makes you happy. You are happy by making others happy. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just reminding you that the reason that we've been doing everything in our lives is for this one purpose. Is that wrong? That's not wrong. It's not the purpose that's wrong. It's the method. It's the method. When the Buddha uttered these words, "Ekainang bhikkhave maggo sattanang visuddhiya." See, the Buddha says, there's only one way to purification. Soka pariddhavanang samatikkamaya. To free the heart of suffering and grief and sorrow. Dukkha domanassanang attangamaya. To bring an end to suffering, to loss, to pain and agony. Nyayasa adhigamaya. To achieve wisdom. To see the light, to see the truth. Chattaro satipattan. This is the only way. The satipattan. So you'll ask me, what is the satipattan, Swami answer? When do we start doing that? Now, we've been going on for about 6 months now. When are you going to start talking to us about the satipattan? And again, my answer to you is, you've been doing that from day one. And you didn't even know it. Only the other day someone asked me, Venerable, customarily, we have seen Swaminarayana deliver sermons, you know, referring to the Tripitaka. Right? Oftentimes you see Pandits and Venerables, they bring the Tripitaka and they deliver sermons through the Tripitaka. But your style is quite different. Well, I learned from my teacher. I mean, you can't fault me for that, right? So the question is, is that effective? Does that work? So my answer is, I don't know, you tell me. Does it? If something works or not, who's going to be the judge of that? You know, I put up a shop. I'm going to put up a cake shop. Like, I want to sell cakes. I bake cakes. I do it to the best of my ability. How am I going to check whether it works or not? Where's the proof? It's a cake shop, so you can't say it's in the pudding. It's a cake shop. So where's the proof? It's in the customers. If they keep coming back, it's because something's working for them. That's not to say there's anything wrong with referring to the Tripitaka and delivering a discourse in line with a sutta. There's nothing wrong with that. That is one style. That's one approach. This is a slightly different approach. It's just a different approach. That's not to say that I don't refer to the Tripitaka. I'm always with the Tripitaka. But here's what I know about the Tripitaka. The Tripitaka contains sutras that was or discourses that were delivered by the Buddha to specific individuals. And here's the deal. None of them are in the room right now. If you could bring them back from when the Buddha was alive, or the Devas who listened to some of those discourses, or the Brahmas who listened to the rest of them, if you could bring them back here, perhaps I would go through, turn the pages of the Tripitaka, find the discourse that was delivered exactly precisely to them, and then I'd start. So then I'd say, once upon a time, the Buddha uttered this discourse to you, young man, so listen to it again. I don't know why you're still here, because that day the Buddha must have wasted his time. You're still here. So that's the deal. None of those discourses were delivered to you. In fact, if we could have just delivered the Dhamma sermons using the Tripitaka, one sutta would have been enough for the Buddha, wouldn't it? Why didn't he just go from town to town, person to person, house to house, delivering just the one discourse? What's wrong with the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta? What's wrong with that? So why did he not just deliver, keep on delivering the same discourse time and time and time again? The second discourse he delivered was not the first one repeated. It was the Anattalakkhana Sutta. To the same audience. Could you not have asked the Buddha the same question back then? Venerable sir, if you've given one discourse, why didn't you deliver the same thing again? It's because the Buddha doesn't come prepared with a discourse. You know, you won't find him in his Gandakuti rehearsing a discourse, like writing down in a script or maybe a tablet, whatever you find those days, rehearsing it, right? Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great honor to be here today. Pacing the room up and down, watching, looking at himself in the mirror just to make sure that he's presentable, his body language is all right. You're not going to find the Buddha doing that, because he's spontaneous. He's the epitome of spontaneity. He's spontaneous. He comes to an audience, he opens his eyes, he sees who's there, but he has a special skill that none of us have. You know what he can do? He can scan each and every one of you. Because he has this very special knowledge called the Pariyo Pariyatanyane, Indriya Paro Pariyatanyane. In other words, he can scan your faculties. There are five faculties that enable and help and support one to attain Nibbana. Shraddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Prajna. How much Shraddha do you have? The Buddha can see. You wonder, how is that possible? Don't ask me, ask the Buddha. He is incomparable, you know that, right? The other day I was just reading up how many Buddhas he passed as a Bodhisattva on his quest to becoming a Buddha. It's in the hundreds of thousands. Next day I'll come and count, I'll give you the facts with these precise numbers. Because he, once the Bodhisattva resolves to become a Buddha, he starts off by doing this thing called Manopranidhana. In other words, he thinks he wants to be a Buddha. That's all. He stops at that, you know, like a wish. How many times have you stopped at wishing for something? I wish I could do this one day. So there's a time in his life span as a Bodhisattva where he wishes for it. But it's not just any old wish. He only thinks about it. This is what the scriptures say. He thinks about it. So mentally he's preparing himself for it. But he doesn't utter anything about this. He doesn't use his speech. He doesn't vocalize it. He only thinks about it. And then there comes a time after he has fulfilled that Manopranidhana, he goes to Vachipranidhana. In other words, he encourages others. He speaks to others. Have you not been doing that? There's a sermon. Come on, Sunday morning. Vachi Pranidhan. The Buddha does the same. Because he knows, as you know, on the quest to becoming a Supreme Buddha, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a lone quest. Once someone becomes a Supreme Buddha, an entirety, a large proportion of the human population, particularly devas, brahmas, countless numbers, although ultimately it's just a drop of water in the ocean, but you've heard that there were hundreds of thousands of arahants back in the day, right? By today's numbers, you know, that's like Mount Meru to a handful of sand in today's numbers. But he sees all of us. He wants the Buddha, he wants his Buddhahood to be the key to our liberation. So therefore, Vachi Pranidhan is what he does next. He invites people. You and I would have been there, maybe eating grass, but we were still there. We were there. He encouraged us. He said, you know, aspire to Buddhahood. Aspire to a greater truth. Aspire to liberation. Aspire to vimukti. Why do you suffer? You don't have to suffer. Do something about it, he used to say. This was the period he spent doing the Vachi Pranidhana, preparing himself and the population of people who were meant to cross the ocean of samsara along with him as captain. So he was building his ship. It's not only Noah who had an ark. The Buddha did as well. So now we are all sailing in it. Then there comes a period, it's called the Kaya Pranidhana. At this stage, he starts to act. So it's not just verbal encouragement, but he physically does things to encourage people. Perhaps he'll go and build a stupa, and he'll invite others to come and join with that. Building a bodhi, a stupa. That's why it's called a chaitya. Right at the top you have the pinnacle. One of these days I'll explain to you why a chaitya takes that form. It is constructed in a certain way. You know, nothing our ancestors did was just for show, ladies and gentlemen. I can tell you that now and forever. Nothing our ancestors did was just for show. Because they closely associated with the Mahasangha, with the Buddha. Arahants were everywhere. Every other day they would go to a monastery, to a temple, to a forest where a Swaminohanse would be practicing the Dhamma, aspiring to Nibbana, and offering some alms, or maybe going and sitting down with them, attending to them. They would always come back spiritually more advanced, more enlightened than when they went in. So they'd learn something that would enlighten them every single day. Today we think that we are a more advanced species than our ancestors. Not so. Today we can't live without our phones. Back then, it's not that they didn't have phones because they were less advanced. It's because they didn't need phones. We shouldn't get this the wrong way around. Because then we begin to have this sense of, you know, we fool ourselves. To think that we are more advanced than them. In fact, no, they were far more advanced than us. Spiritually, they were more advanced. In fact, happiness they had. Today, we have everything around us except for the one thing that we do all this for. What is that? Happiness. Open your fridge today when you get back home and see how many things you have in there, all bought in the name of happiness. What fridge did our ancestors have? Your great-grandmother, did she have a fridge at home? No, she just lived for the day. That was enough for her. Because she realized that she didn't come into this world to eat, to stuff herself, to delight the taste buds. She realized, she knew this. Because she starts the day by worshipping the Buddha. Twice a month, she at least, at the very least, she would go to the temple. Today, the poya day is the only day, but back then they used to have the masa poya. It's still in the calendar, but people don't know what it is. But today you have many days in the calendar. You have the going on trip days, you have the birthdays, you have the anniversary dates, you have the work get-together days. And you have so many things written on Poya Day, because that's the one public holiday you get in the month. It's the day when you have to do your shopping, right? Do the house up, you know, do all the work that you have to do, get the car service, whatever, right? All those things have to happen on the Poya Day. Thankfully, the taverns are closed on Poya Day, but to make up for that, the previous night, it's in full service. But our ancestors weren't like that. It would be wrong to think that they didn't have a clue as to what was going on. They were a much more advanced species. They understood the earth. They understood the skies. They understood nature. So they were always in harmony with nature. Look at what people are doing today. People are desecrating nature. They're destroying nature. Because of a desire that never gets fulfilled, never gets fulfilled, never satisfied. So put it in very simple terms, today people are raping nature, Mother Nature. This is rape in broad daylight. But, you know, no matter what policies and regulations and rules they bring in, you can't reasonably expect this to stop. It's unreasonable, to be fair. You can bring in the rules and regulations, you can find the people who are the perpetrators, but it's unreasonable really to expect it to stop unless you give people an alternative. If I ask you to hold your nose and shut your mouth at the same time, reasonable or unreasonable? It's okay for me to ask you to hold your nose, provided you're allowed to open your mouth, right? Because you have an alternative. But if I ask you to shut both your nose and your mouth, what, you breathe through your ears? You can't do that. So what's going to happen soon enough? You know, can the bravest person in this room close your mouth and hold your nose for 5 minutes? The bravest person in this room? You can't. Because your survival instincts kick in. You can't do that. In the same manner. Because, you know, there's a vexation inside. I want to live. This is the most primitive, the most basic vexation that all sentient beings have. Because I am here. I am, aren't I? I am. That was a spell that cursed us all. You are. Oh yeah, I am. Our regulars will understand what I mean by this. If you've been coming along for the last few months, you know exactly what I mean by this. I am. Existence. The perception of existence. But back then, you know, Arahatun Vahanse, once he realizes that his life is no longer necessary, they have the ability to give up on the life faculty. Just think about it, folks. Just to, you know, be able to have a state of mind where you can resolve, in 3 full moons from now, I will pass away. And that's fine. Because that is what does most good. When there were droughts back then, there were severe droughts back then, not just today, back then as well, there were severe droughts. And there came a point where there wasn't enough for everyone. But the Buddhas were preaching, the Arahatanvanses were preaching, the Dhamma, and people were beginning to understand. There were many Sotapannas, many stream enterers. So once the Arahatanvanses realized that they had done what they had to do, what they could do in their lifetime, what is the job of an Arahatanvanse? What do you think? Building high rises? Becoming a millionaire? What is the purpose of an Arahatanvanse? Creating offspring. That is their purpose. To produce offspring. What? Have babies? What offspring do I refer to? Create sotapannas. That is the purpose of Arahatanvanse. To create sotapannas. To create offspring of the Buddha. Aryans. to help people be reborn in the Aryan clan. In other words, someone who understands the Dhamma and someone who dedicates and commits themselves to the cause of Nibbana. That is what an Rahatan once it does. So once he has realized, I've come to a point in my life where I no longer have the energy to do so. Now I'm just weak, I'm feeble, I'm frail. I'm only a burden now. Yes, people can offer me things and earn merits out of it, but then there are others who need to survive and carry on so that they don't have to stop at being a sotapanna. They can carry on and become an anagami person, a sakrudagami person, and go on to become an arahatan vahanse. Once an arahatan vahanse realizes that his presence is the blockage, is the barrier, is the challenge to that, what do you think an arahatan vahanse does? He gives up. By mere resolve, he can do that. By mere resolve, in 3 full moons from today. You know, there used to be a Rahatan Vahanse who'd ask people. When someone came, used to come and ask, Swami, so we've seen Rahatan Vahanses pass away in their sleep. We've seen Rahatan Vahanses pass away while he sat down for meditation. So this monk asked, this great Rahatan, have you seen Rahatan Vahanse pass away while walking? And the answer was, no, we've not seen one. All right, okay. Well, on this day, come along and you will witness that. See, he knows how much longer he has to live. I'm not saying that's the deal. I mean, today a doctor can scan you, maybe take your pulse and tell you how much life you have left. That's not what we have to be impressed by. What we have to be impressed by is he said this without batting an eyelid. Without a worry, no fear. He said, you want to see someone die walking? Come on. Today, you know, if you hear someone say, you want to see someone die walking? Meet me in the dark alleyway. And don't bring anyone with you. You know, ladies and gentlemen, there's a Rahatan Vahanse living inside each and every one of you. My effort is to try and awaken them. Come on, wake up, you Rahatan Vahanses. What are you doing? There's a great Arahant inside each and every one of you. It's your defilements that keep him or her suppressed. Your Raga, your Dvesha, your Moha. Ultimately, it's not your Raga, Dvesha or Moha. It's Raga, Dvesha and Moha. Ignorance and attachment, they keep them suppressed. I look at this room and I can see 100 Rahatan Vahanses waiting to happen. When are you going to let them out of the cages in which you keep them trapped? Every day I come here and here's the key. Open the cage. You take the key from me and say, yes, Swami Nas, I will. I will, I will. I ask you, when? I will, I will. When? When are you going to open that cage and let that Rahatan Vahanse out? So that he or she can spread his love and kind compassion to all sentient beings and create more offspring in the Buddha's asana. Do you believe in what I tell you, ladies and gentlemen? Do you accept this truth? That there's a Rahatan Vahanse inside each and every one of you, waiting to surface? All you're doing is just keeping them down, like a ball trying to come to the surface. Right? But you're suppressing it, you're keeping it under the water. How dare you? What right do you have to deny the world of the great man and woman that you are to be? Why delay it? Come on. Either in this guise or in disguise. Did you catch that? Either in this guise or in disguise, come on. Let him out. Let her out. Let him out. Because the first thing he or she is going to do is give you peace. Find the Buddha within. So where was the Buddha born? Where is the Buddha going to be born? In India or in Nepal? Or maybe in Pakistan or in Sri Lanka? Maybe in Iceland or in Netherlands? Where is the Buddha going to be born? In our heart. Because that you can prove, right? For the rest of it, you need to refer to the historians. You need the historians to prove that. You need them to go and read the stones, the inscriptions on the stones, in the caves, right? Dig it up. But to prove that a Buddha has been born, all you got to look is within you. It's time to awaken that Buddha. That's why we have the gateway to Nibbana. This is that gateway. Awaken that Buddha, ladies and gentlemen. Don't delay it. Make every effort in your power. Every ounce of energy that you can commit towards this cause, do so. Because you have no right to deny Arhatan Mahansi to this world. They are very few and far between now. For this Buddha Sasana to prevail for the next 2,500 years, where do we think we are going to get Arhatan Mahansi from? Mass? Huh? Are we going to import them from another planet? Don't you feel that you have a role to play in that? Don't you? Hello? Don't pretend like I'm talking to the person sat next to you. If you all feel that you have a part to play in the Buddha's ministry, where do you begin that part? Yeah, fine, you offer me arms. That's like cheering me while I'm in the race. Come on, you can do it, Swami. No, see, you can do it. I'll win my own trophy, thank you very much. With or without your help. I will win my trophy. The reason that we give you the opportunity to earn merits is so that you can win your own trophies. That is why I choose to walk. So I can see many more people win their trophies while I'm still alive. You know, on my deathbed, if you ever get to see me, don't come and tell me how big the monastery is or how much land there is to the monastery, because none of it is mine anyway. When I am not mine, how can the monastery be? I don't have a penny to my name. But when I'm on my deathbed, if you want to make me happy, you come and tell me, Swami Nansa. I used to be an upasaka, or an upasika, or an upasaka. Met you at Rajagiriya. Met you at the monastery. Listened to the talks. I came and joined the community. They were the Rajagiriyans and the Ingirians who looked after me. They helped transform me. I saw the Buddha through your Dhamma, and in the community of the Sangha, I began to grow and cultivate the values, the virtues, the morals and the principles that helped me to progress. And today I can tell you, hand on heart, Venerable Sir, I am free from the four great hells once and for all. Give me that. Come on. Come on. Give me that. Walk up to me and tell me, Swaminathan, I am free from the four great hells once and for all. I will never forsake the Buddha. Because once you're in the four great hells, do you know about the Buddha? Will you know about the Buddha once you're in the four great hells? No, no one knows. We have a few dogs running around at the monastery. We are trying to get them out. You think they know the Buddha? You think they know the Buddha? No, they don't. We live in a forest. It used to be a forest. Now, you know, we have a monastery there. So from time to time, we have monkeys who come jumping from tree to tree. Do you think they know the Buddha? But they're at the monastery. We have all sorts of creepy crawlies. Every other step you take, you have to shoo away a snake or something. No, it's not that bad. I'm just emphasizing for effect. I got to make it look like an adventure, right? For anyone interested in adventure sports. It's not that bad. Used to be, but not anymore. No, it used to be like every week we used to catch something in a bottle. And no, they weren't guarantee us. But, you know, we were never attacked by any. To this day. How could they? When they know that we mean no harm to them. When you're constantly spreading nothing but loving kindness and compassion, it makes a difference. It makes a difference. The environment senses you. You know why we have droughts from time to time? The environment senses you. If you rid your heart of kindness and compassion and mercifulness, if you rid love towards others in your heart, the environment senses you and it treats you like for like. That's why. You know why there are famines from time to time? If you rid your heart of the understanding towards others, compassion and benevolence towards others, understanding another person's pain, if you rid your heart of that, the environment responds to you like for like. You want to hurt others? Well, have some of your own medicine. Mother Nature is always responsive. It's how it is. We create our own environment. We create our own nature. Nature is your own creation. Someone asked me yesterday at the monastery, Swami, Nansa, do you believe in God? So yesterday's sermon is titled, Does God Exist? Teaser. Do you believe in God? I said, yes, of course I believe in God. Why wouldn't I? All good Buddhists believe in God. Give or deny. That is what God is. Whatever you give, you get. Whatever you deny, you are denied. What else does God do? Just think about it for a moment. What else does God do? When you're kind to others, how does God treat you? With kindness. When you're gentle to others, when you're willing to lend a ear to someone who's weeping, what does God do? When you are a friend, a genuine friend to others, what does God gift you with? Good friends. What you give, God gives back to you. What if you deny someone goodness? What if you deny someone kindness, a hearty meal, an opportunity to progress themselves and develop themselves? How do you think God is going to treat you in return? He gives you like for like. So God judges you on your own merits. God is very fair. He's very fair. He's the fairest thing I know. So mother, mother, oh, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all? God is the fairest of them all. Because He's very fair. He's always fair. He never got it wrong. Whatever you've given or you've denied others, God has given you or denied you. So is there any point in pointing your finger at God and making demands at Him? Is there any point in doing that? Hey, God! Why do you treat me like this? Why do you give to those but not give me? You've given them property, you've given them wealth, you've given them a house, but you've taken mine. Mine was washed away in the floods. Mine crumbled down in the earthquake. But look at those people. They're doing just fine. Why do you treat me unfairly, God? And God says what? No. I was never unfair. I was always fair. I only give what you've given. I only deny you what you have denied. So do I believe in God? Of course I do believe in God. Don't you believe in God? You never thought that would be a question a Swami Nansi would ask an audience of Buddhists, right? Do you believe in God? Yes, of course we believe in God. This is how I perceive God. If you're asking me, is he an entity? Nothing's an entity. Everything's a manifestation. All is cause and effect. What do you see here? Not cause and effect? It's cause and effect in, well, I was going to say black and white, but blue and white. It's cause and effect. You create the causes, you reap the effects. How does this knowledge help you? Does it undermine your wisdom or does it empower you? Empowers you. What would you rather be? Empowered or undermined? Or helpless? Do you want to be someone who, when things go wrong, point your finger up at the air, up at the sky, and say, it was his fault? Would you rather be someone like that who doesn't take responsibility and accountability for your own failings and for your own successes? Or would you rather be someone who takes full responsibility for their well-being, for their goodness and success, as well as the failures? What would you rather be? What did you teach your children to be? Now you have the answer. When your children were not getting the scores that you wanted them to get in the class, what did you ask them to do? When they came and said, no, it's the teacher's fault. She doesn't teach me well. It's the next person's fault. He studies better than I do. That's why he got more marks than I did. What? No, the system is not designed in that way. It's designed in a way so that you get what you put in. So I encourage you to subscribe to this idea. God exists, ladies and gentlemen. But you need to understand what God is, rather than who God is. What is God? God is the power that we generate for ourselves. You are your own creator. You are your own creator. The reason you're fair today is because of your own doing. The reason you're dark today is because of your own doing. I'm not saying either is right or wrong. Cause and effect, that's all I'm saying. You can't deny that. The reason you were born to your parents and not to someone else's parents is because of your own doing. If you were born blind, that was your own doing. If you were born with all your faculties in fully working order, but 6 years later you went blind, that's your own doing. Now you take full responsibility. See, what Buddhist philosophy teaches us to do is this. There are times in our lives when we were ignorant of this truth, of this higher truth, we would have thrown stones up in the air. Stones that we intended to hurt others, but we threw it up in the air nonetheless. You know what Buddhist philosophy allows you to do? It teaches you to step one foot forward. Just take one step forward. So that when it comes back down, it doesn't come crashing down on your head. He's the perfect one. He finds the flaw in the perfect system. In an otherwise perfect system, once again, in an otherwise perfect system, he finds a loophole. So that you can free yourself from your own wrongdoings. If we had to pay back for all the bad things we've done in our past, ladies and gentlemen, where do we begin? Just forget your past lives. Just remind yourselves of the times in this life itself where you've not always been so kind. You know, right now, you're feeling like saints. I can see the halos over your heads. Nice and bright. Were you always like that? You know, you don't need to nod. It's fine. Remember the times when you went mad? Not that mad. Angry mad. When you vexed so much inside that you needed to vent your anger. You had to. Because when you're angry, you're helpless. That's what you are, helpless. Like a little kid. You hold a kid's hand and walking along the street, he sees a candy shop. Now the kid wants candy. How much convincing is it going to take him to stop asking you for that? He'll say, Mom, I need candy. No, not today. Mom, I need candy. No, not today. Then what does he do? He screams. And if that doesn't work, he rolls on the floor. He protests. And then out of embarrassment, mothers in the house will know this, out of embarrassment, you have to give the kid what he's asking for. There's only one way to shut a kid up. Give him what he wants. That's why they're called kids. A kid's mindset. Then you have the adult's mindset. I'm coming there one step at a time. So first you have the kid's mindset. What I want, I have to get, no matter what, whether it causes me embarrassment, whether, you know, shame, guilt, whatever, it doesn't matter. Then you have the adult's mindset. No, they still want. It's not that they don't want, they still want. But now, they create a conventional system. See, commerce, what is commerce after all? What is the economy after all? What is business after all? Is it not a mere convention that we have come up with? Who defined business? God? No, ignorance and attachment define business. Who created commerce? Ignorance and attachment did. Who created the economy? Now don't tell me the father of economy was so and so. That's not what I'm talking about. The father of economy was ignorance. Because it was a way, people came up with a system that was acceptable to the many, whereby you could get what you want and not end up in behind iron bars. So the iron bars themselves were part of the system. See, today, law and order, as well as punishment, it's all part of the system. I'm asking you to step outside your small circles and think about the bigger picture. I'm not just talking about yourself now. Think about the bigger picture, ladies and gentlemen. You must have done a lot of study about the economy, commerce, right? How the world works, all of that, business, politics, and so on. But take a step out and look at it from this perspective for a change. I'm giving you a new vantage point. Look at it from this perspective. Don't you see how it was ignorance that created this entire world and all the systems that keep it going? So nowadays, people have a way and a means to get what they want because they're adults. They can't just go screaming and shouting and hitting people and you know, breaking arms and limbs when they want what they want to get. Now they have a system. So we've come up with money. We've come up with credit cards so you can get things on credit. What is credit after all? It's just a perception. I borrow $100 from you. You forget that I borrowed it from you. What do I owe you now? Isn't that what you always wish for? Oh, how I wish the people I borrowed things from forget that I ever did that. So you think, you know, that book that you borrowed from your friend, you promised to return it. After a week, it's still at home gathering dust, isn't it? 1 week passed, 2 weeks passed, and you realize, oh, I'd better return it. So when then 3 weeks pass, you go cleaning the house, and you realize the book is still there. Now it's too late to go back because it's embarrassing now. And to add to it, you haven't read a page of it yet. Right, so you can't return it until you read it because if they ask you now, so how was the book? What are you going to say? So now you need another week to read it, but you can't find the time to read it because you're too busy. You didn't think you were going to be that busy when you borrowed the book, but now you can't return it with a straight face. So now there's only one thing you can do, wish and pray. What? Well, that they forget. That's how some of the stuff that never belonged to you have now belonged to you. You have inherited them from the people who have forgotten that they lent it to you. But thankfully, they probably didn't need them themselves. So they were just looking for a rubbish pit to put their own rubbish, and you made it at your home. Fair enough. But my point is, what is credit? If two people have to come to an agreement is merely a convention. I'm not saying those conventions must not be fulfilled. They should. In fact, if you don't fulfill that convention, then it becomes theft. Both in the two-dimensional world as well as in the three-dimensional world. So you will have to then pay what you owe. On that point, by the way, if there's anything you owe anyone, And you have promised it that you will return that to them in due course, in due time. Do keep to your promises, because otherwise you will have to pay for it the hard way. People ask me sometimes, Swaminanda, why don't you encourage people to stop killing animals? Why don't we start a movement and stop the slaughter of, you know, cattle and so on? Why don't we start a movement to do that? Well, my answer is, I have. This is that movement. A cow is meant to pay its debts to society by giving up its flesh, its milk, and every part of its body, because that's what it took from society when it was a human being. It took out of society everything that was good about it, everything that was wholesome, all the morals, the values, the virtues. What was the muscle of the society? The values, the virtues, it took away from society. It's what people do today. When they go around spreading lies, like, you know, don't worship your parents, don't respect your parents. What are they? They gave birth to you, then it's their duty to look after you. That completely destroys the very fabric of society. Because a society can only exist for as long as the morals, the values, and the virtues are there. That is the gum that keeps us together. If you didn't have mutual respect towards each other, would you be under one roof together like this? People have good manners towards each other. These are all very important for a cohesive society to coexist and live together. Morals and virtues and values, this is the thread that holds us together. We need that. And the better you understand the Dhamma, the easier it becomes to be a person like that. Because then you don't have to be patient. It's only a patient who has to be patient. A patient who suffers from raga, dvesha, moha, they have to be patient. Because once you have no need for anything, once all your wants have been dispelled, have been extinguished, have been exterminated, now you don't need to be patient. Do you enjoy being patient? Is it a nice feeling to be patient? Someone says, please be patient. Just imagine you on the phone, the last time you were on the phone, onto a call center or something, trying to get something from them. Then they have a recording on the line. Because if they put a real person, you'd have a go at them. Right? So they put a recording on the line. They play some music to lull you to sleep, but it doesn't work because, you know, you're too frustrated now. And then what do they do? Please be patient and we'll be with you shortly. A few minutes later, please be patient and we'll be with you very shortly. Put your hand up if you really, really, really enjoy that, because I have a job for you. No one likes waiting. That's why they say patience is a virtue. Just imagine someone on the bus sat next to you. He's got a bad tummy. Do I need to tell you what happens next? He's eaten something bad. Now you have to sit next to him. And on your trip from Colombo to Anuradhapura, you know the feeling. Yeah, been there, done that. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Now what do you have to do? But there's only so much ventilation you can get by opening that little piece of window, right? After that, all you can do is what? Be patient. You enjoy that? I have a job for you, if you do. You're working at a shop. Your customers come and always complain and moan. They never appreciate what you do. Maybe you're a salesperson, a shopkeeper, a sales assistant. All they have is fault finding and blaming. That's all they got to do. What does your manager tell you to do? Be patient with them. Be patient. Don't ever say anything back to them. Be patient. Always wear a smile on your face. When they come up to you and they say all sorts of unfair and unreasonable things, all sorts of accusations, things you would never dream of doing, They say, you cheated me. You were supposed to give me that change, but you didn't. I saw you. You put it in your pocket. No, I didn't. And they start accusing you. I have this experience because I used to work at a shop. When I was at college, I wanted to earn myself my pocket money. So I went and worked in a shop. And I learned a lot about people. As I say, I haven't fallen out of the sky. I know what life is like. When people want something out of you, by hook or by crook, they will get it. I know people who used to come to the shop. I used to work here. They used to come to the shop. They didn't have the money to buy what they wanted. You know what they'd do? They wanted two of something. Okay? And let's say it was $100 or £100. They wanted two of something. They can only afford one. They come into the shop. They pay the 100, take one, walk out of the shop and come back and say, where's my change? I say, what change? You only gave me 100. No, I gave you 200. Some days the cameras don't work either. My lucky day. Now, it's your word or the customer's word? And when we are in business, who's always right? The customer's always right. So when the customer says, no, I gave you 200. I thought, well, okay, I'll give you the change then. No, I don't want the change. I just want another one of these. That's how they get two for the price of one. But then they begin by accusing you that you shortchanged them. That's what I'm saying. When someone wants something and they want it badly, they're a kid. They're a kid. They don't play by the rules of the system. That is theft. That is cheating. Bribery goes on all over the place. You know about this stuff. Sometimes you might have been on the receiving end of it. Maybe you denied, maybe you accepted. Right? We were not all saints. But you know when you were at, you know, on either side of this arrangement, you knew deep down in your heart that you were doing something that was unholy. It was not right. It was unrighteous. Because someone else deserved that opportunity, but someone was willing to tickle you. Someone was willing to tickle you with some something, a little something. You might have either taken it or you might have denied it. Either way, you know what people are willing to do when they want something. Some would sell their mothers if it came to that. They would. You look at me like you're surprised. What, you don't read the papers? Because I don't. I'm speculating. But you must have the facts. I don't read the papers. I don't watch the news. But I know how the mind works. When the Dhamma is not there, when the Dhamma is absent, and Raga, Dvesha, Moha take over, I know what the demons Raga, Dvesha, Moha are. So if you've ever been on either end of this arrangement where you were part of a bribe, all I'm saying is, do you see how far people are willing to go when they need something so badly? Now it doesn't matter whether it hurts someone else or you take away, you know, you take away the floor from underneath someone's feet. It's that bad. But then it doesn't matter. You'd never wish it upon your children. In fact, if you found out and you were the victim of something like that, just imagine how much, what you'd have to say about it. You'd probably sue them till bankruptcy. But when you are the party that wants something, I'm not necessarily pointing fingers at you, I'm just saying society, this is how society works. Excuse me. These things go on all over the place, ladies and gentlemen. What you give is what you get. As I say, God is always fair. People only think about the short term. They're so short-sighted, so short-sighted, that they only think about what they're going to have for dinner tonight. They don't stop to think that what I'm eating right now, I'm not going to be able to digest. So tomorrow morning, I'm going to have a heck of a ride. They don't think about that. And there's a reason why people are so short-sighted. Because you deal with individual chittas, that's why. Inside you right now is a single chitta. It doesn't stay for any length of time, only for the duration of a single chitta. And that is so fast. A billion chittas will arise and pass away in the moment it takes me to do that. A billion chittas, if not more. But at any given time, there's only one chitta. And when that chitta vexes, it cares not about what's going to happen to the next chitta. It's like, to give you the analogy so they can all understand this, aren't there people who do things with no regard to what defame and demeaning accusations and blame it will bring to their children? Have you not seen people who do things like that? They do all sorts, get up to all sorts of mischief knowing, they know this, that they have a family. They know they have friends, they know they have siblings. And they know that doing this is only going to bring disgrace to their family, to their children. And their children will never be able to walk the streets again with their heads held up high. They know this. But in that moment where they're vexed, you forget you are a father. You forget. I've heard of people who have children all over the country. Some come up to us. They confess. Swaminathan said, thanks to all of you, thanks to the Mahasangha, thanks to the Buddha. Today I have come across your teaching, the Buddha's teaching. Today I realize what an animal I was. I was completely taken over by lust. Swaminathan said, in those moments, I forgot that I was a father. All I could think about was the vexation that was building inside of me, and I was so tempted. All I could think of was, how do I relieve myself of this pressure that was building up inside of me? What can you say, ladies and gentlemen? As I always say, we love the sinners. We only hate the sin, not the sinner. That's why people walk through our gates. And they come and reveal everything. They just want to get these things off their chest. You have no idea, folks, because I know this because we, our Swaminas is at the monastery, our Anagarika Mahatmya is at the monastery. They listen to these stories every single day. You think you're the only one who has problems? Everyone does. And everyone lives with this black box inside their hearts. All those secrets, things that they never meant to do, but in that moment, at that moment where ignorance took over, raga, dvesha, moha took over, they forgot who they were. They forgot that they were a child of a parent. They forgot that they were a husband to a loving wife. They completely forgot the fact that they were a wife to a husband who doted on them and loved her with every cell of his body. They forgot that. When the mind gets taken over by raga, dvesha, moha, betrayal is child's play. It's a piece of cake. Perhaps these ring bells for some of you. Maybe there are dark demons who still lay inside of you. But we have the sword of wisdom. Let guilt not hold you back, because it kills you from the inside. So all I'm saying is, when there's a chitta that is helpless because of ignorance and attachment, there is no hope. It's too late then. That is why our mission at the Buddha Sasana is to try and spread the truth with as many living beings as we possibly can. Every man, woman, and child deserves to hear this. So that they can live a full life, a happy life, a really happy life, a really meaningful life. A life where their presence is not a curse to others. How many people on the street do you think, if you bumped into them, would just turn around and say, "I'm sorry," versus the number of people who would look at you, maybe frown at you, maybe even spit in your face, or swear at you, or maybe even sue you? With what confidence can you walk on the street, knowing that no harm will come to you? When you send your daughter out at night, aren't you scared? Mothers, fathers, aren't you worried about their safe return? If you send your child abroad for their studies, for their education, aren't you scared? Aren't you dead scared? What might happen to them? What association they might fall into? Because you know this for a fact. If you sent them to the monastery, you would not be so worried. Why? Not because it's full of monks. Oh no. There are some monks that you would not rather spend to give your children to. That much I think I know. Not on this earth, some other earth. It's not because at the monastery we have monks. This is what you know. At the monastery there is the Dhamma. The reason that you're so scared to send your daughter after 8. How many children here, right? Young girls, ladies, when you were younger, got told off by your mother, your father for being 5 minutes late after 8. Doesn't ring a bell? How your father gave you a piece of his mind and made sure that you'd never be late again. And then the curfew got moved to 7 p.m. Why? Back then you thought, why punish me like this? All I was 5 minutes late. That's what you thought. But they knew something you didn't. Because out there are wolves and jackals and cheetahs and hyenas on 2 legs. No, I'm not insulting anyone. I'm insulting a chitta that is not tamed with the Dhamma. That I will insult till the cows come home. Of course. The Buddha did it himself. Hino potujjaniko anaryo anatta sanghito. That's why you are scared of sending your children out at night. Even when you're at home, how many times do you go and check your locks? If you send your child on a trip, school trip, these days what do? You give them a phone. Without mistake, you give them a phone. And what do? Every 5 minutes. Until it comes to point, your child says, "Mama, I won't go again. Right? Stop bothering me. I'm not going again. This is the last time. I'm not going again." Every 15 minutes you'll give them a call. You say, "At least send me a text message just to say you're okay." Your concern is not whether the bus is going to run into a tree. That's not your concern, because you can't stop that. Then you have to ask the bus driver to call you every 15 minutes. What good is there calling your daughter every 15 minutes? Or maybe fix a GPS sensor on the bus or something. That's what you ought to be doing if you're worried that the bus might, run into some other vehicle or maybe go down somewhere. What you're really concerned is who your daughter is sitting next to. Who she sat next to? Because although you know that you care so deeply about your own child, the boy sat next to her, the girl sat either side of them. What do you know about them? Well, here's what you know, that your best friend, your daughter's best friend, every year wins a class prize for maths. Is that enough assurance? Let me tell you again, she wins a class prize for maths. For what? For maths. Now are you assured? Ah, then it's okay. I needn't worry then. Buddha, as long as you sit next to the girl who wins the class prize for maths, I'm not worried. Do you? Are you okay with that? No, you're not. Because what assurance do you have that her parents give her the Dhamma? You know, if you want to serve society, ladies and gentlemen, you're doing it the best way you can right now. This is your service to society. Why do you think I say that? What is the biggest problem that affects society in this day and age? It's not hunger. It's not. It's not poverty. It's not a falling and rising and fluctuating economy. No, it's not. It's fear. It's the fear that people have that the next person they're going to bump into might stab them, might pickpocket them, might rape them, might kidnap them. This is the fear that people live with. As you allow the Dhamma to heal you, there remains no reason within your hearts and minds to engage in such behavior, because you realize happiness does not come from the outside world. People steal because they think happiness comes in the object. Therefore, if happiness is in an object, if happiness is in this, and if I were able to convince you that happiness is in this, if you were a kid, you would steal it. If you're an adult, you'd find a way to acquire it. But if you become an Aryan, you will realize that I have been uttering falsehoods, that happiness is not in it. This is the journey that I want you all to make. Most people, they are born kids, they grow up to become adults, and they die adults. Some actually go back to kidhood. Some go back to being kids. Some adults, when you know, in some moments, they're weak, and they can't maintain their adulthood. The kid comes back up. That's when you find them getting up to mischief, either because of desire or aversion or delusion. If you see two people fighting on the street, are you telling me that is adult behavior? You remember your two children, when they were Ayya and Malli, were 6 and 7, they fought with each other. Yes, then you said kids. That's what kids do. Two people on the street fighting. They're both fathers, by the way, and their children are stood by the side watching them. Why, you're going to call them adults? Is that adult behavior? What is adult about them? What's adult about them? The body? The body might be that of an adult, but the mind? Kid. It's a kid's mind. But people learn to be patient. But then they say, don't try my patience. You've heard that, right? Who said it? Wait, let me look away now, answer. Who did you hear saying that? Don't try my patience. Don't awaken the devil within me. Sounds better when said in Sinhalese, doesn't it? Because it rings more bells, that's why. You heard it that way. Do those echoes reach you now? you know what? Don't ever catch you saying such things again. You are disciples of the Buddha, ladies and gentlemen. Be proud of yourself. Have a sense of esteem about that. Live a life of honor. So that when someone bumps into you, they ask you, who's your teacher? How have you become the person that you are today? Because this is not the same Samara Vikrama I used to know. Have people ask you that. Then you'll be offering me pirikara at that time. And you won't be even stood in front of me. I won't even know it. But that is you offering pirikara to the Mahasangha. Because you will be engaging and indulging in the purpose of the Buddha Sasana. Ensuring that the Buddha Sasana thrives for another day. So that Buddha Sasana lives on for another day, because of your behavior. Because someone will witness your behavior. And even though they might not do it physically, mentally, they will make veneration to that. You know, when someone appreciates you, that is a veneration. Sometimes when we go to international schools and do sermons to those young children there, they don't know how to bring their palms, hands together and say sadhu. At the end of a sermon, what do? They clap. I don't get offended. I rejoice in that. I say, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Shall we have another round of applause? And they go for another one. Because in their own way, what are they saying? Sadhu. So what I'm saying is, you know, have people walk up to you, ladies and gentlemen. And even if they don't vocalize it, even if they don't spell it out to you, if you've left a mark on someone's heart, like this lady says, you know, you have all left an indelible mark on my heart. If you are able to do that, you have now committed yourself. You've done something to prosper the Sambuddha Sasana. That is what the Buddha would have wanted of all of us. When the Mara invited the Buddha to pass away on three occasions, he always said, Mara, when my Buddha Sasana has been established so that the bhikkhus and the bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas have taken responsibility of disseminating the Dhamma, prolonging the Sasana, and ensuring that it thrives for the next 5,000 years, I will take my leave. I don't need any reminders from you. Thank you very much. Is what the Buddha said. On the third occasion, the Buddha said, yep, time has come now. Therefore, in three full moons from now, I will be ready to leave. That is what the Buddha's purpose was. How do you make your father proud? There are fathers in the room, right? I'm sure as a father, at some point you would have sat down with your son, your daughter, right? Maybe put them on your lap, maybe gave them a hug and pat their heads and said, Putta, I want you to make your daddy proud. I want you to make Appachi proud. Remember? Maybe Amma said that, Putta, when you grow up, you should be someone who makes your dad proud. What did your dad ask you to do to make him proud? You want to have children in half the country? Become the most wanted criminal? No. Your parents wanted you to live a life whereby people would observe your behaviors, your conduct, and would come and ask you, Buddha, who are your parents? It gave me great delight. When I was younger, I remember people would come and ask me, Buddha, who's your amma and tata? Then I say, my amma and appachi. I'd correct them. My amma and appachi are so and so. Because it was a great moment of jubilance for me. I felt like I'd won the world. To be able to make my parents proud of what I'd done. Maybe it was as a singing contest. Maybe it was at athletics. Maybe it was because I'd given a speech and that had impressed someone. Or maybe because someone saw me being kind to someone else, they would come and ask me. Who are your parents? Is usually the question that they ask. I want to do the same today. There's my father. I want to live a life so that people come up to me and ask me, who's your father? That's why you keep coming back every week. We've been able to do something. I'm so happy about that, that we've been able to do something here so that week on week you come and ask me, Swami Nansa, who's your father and what did he teach you? Isn't that what you ask me every week? If there's more, we'd like to come back next week. So you come back next week and you ask, Swami Nansa, what did your father teach you? That's the life I want to live. To make my father proud of me. So if I can do it, yes. If I can do it, why can't we? Yes. Why can't we? And there's only one way to do it. You can't simply make just make a resolve, right? I'm going to be good from today. Doesn't work. Doesn't work like that. Because patience has its limits. When it jumps that limit, after that, you know, you're not the saint that you are right now. So therefore, you should become someone who doesn't have to rely on patience. That's what I want you to be. Someone who doesn't rely on patience. Because you're just so full of virtue. You're full of morality. You're just full of goodness, so much so that you are synonymous with goodness and greatness. When I say the word Sariputta Thera, can you think of one bad thing? Just one. Give me one. You give me one bad thing, I'll give you 100 good things. Give me another bad thing, I'll give you another 100 good things. Go on. Right? Ready? 3, 2, 1. Right, let's go. One bad thing. Come on. No? He made his father proud. Not a single bad thing to say about him. Nothing. What a great life. You know, what an example those people left for us. And they were human beings, ladies and gentlemen. You know, they were not gods. They were human beings, just like you and I. Upatissa got fed up when he was watching some girls dancing. It was a party. It was music. Dancing all going on. That was when he got fed up. He's like, what's all this nonsense? Nothing is making me happy. We've been watching this every year. It's called the Giragga Samaja. What's this? Every year we've been coming here. He was with his friend, his best friend. This makes no sense. Yeah, I yearn for the day where you sit down in front of your TV and have the same epiphany. When is that day going to come for you? Today you sit in front of your TVs, you put on your music, you put on your drama, you put on your television, right? Your musicals, whatever. You sit down, you watch that. When is the day going to come to you where you're going to look at the person sat next to you? Maybe your loving wife, maybe your loving husband, maybe your brother or your sister, maybe your best buddy, and share with them truly from the bottom of your heart, what's the meaning of all this nonsense? People think they're dancing. They think they're singing. They think they're acting. What's going on? It's just a bunch of vipaka. How is this making any of us happy? You and I both know, but at the end of this show, they're just going to go backstage, right? And then they're just going to be, what? They're going to be tired and exhausted. This is just a show. This is just a showpiece. This is not reality. When is that day going to come for you? When is that day going to come for you where the pictures you see on Facebook stop fooling you? You see people going on trips, whatever, right? Throwing parties, dressing up, putting pictures on Facebook and Instagram and this thing and that thing. When's the day going to come to you where you look at that and go, what's the meaning of all this really? Are we any closer to happiness? How many times have we seen the same drama? Are we any closer to happiness? Folks, I ask you, when is this day going to come to you? Today? Tomorrow? The day after? Next week? Or is it not in a million years? You only have another 2,500 years before which, if you don't have this epiphany, no one's going to rescue you. But don't count on those 2,500 years, because that 2,500 are only available to beings who come across the Buddha's teaching, which you now have. Don't count your lucky stars. I don't trust tomorrow. I don't trust tomorrow. Because those who keep trusting on their tomorrows never do what they have to do today. Today. They just keep trusting their tomorrows. When will you go to the gym? Tomorrow, right? Yeah. In Sinhalese, we call it the Balagiri Dosa. Not today. Tomorrow. But tomorrow never comes. I speak out of love and compassion for all of you. When is that day that came to Upatissa and Kolita, who were the two best friends? When is that day going to come for you? Where you're going to look at the drama that's going on in the world out there, on TV, on the streets, in the supermarkets, in, you know, along the shop aisles, along the roads, right, in the alleyways, on the stage, off the stage, behind the stage. When is that day going to come to you? At the workplace, by the water cooler. You know the things that people talk about once they get to the water cooler. When are you going on holiday next? Where are you going? We went to this place and that place. Why don't you try this restaurant and that restaurant? Oh, come on. Is that why you were born Buddhists? To try out the 100 most interesting restaurants before you die? I'm not speaking to you in dismay. I speak to you with love and compassion because I want this day to come for you folks sooner rather than later. Because if it comes to you too late, you know that it's going to be very difficult for you. As some members in the audience will bear witness to. If it comes too late for you, then it's going to be difficult. Not impossible, but difficult. But then there are those here for whom I wish that it came today. No, actually yesterday. So we could have started today. This is the only thing that is worth doing. You know I'm not making this stuff up, right? Don't you? When I tell you that there's nothing else worth doing, don't you think I'm being honest and genuine and candid with you? Just on the way here, I saw that we passed a playground outside the school, And I saw a few children running up and down. It reminded me of my childhood years. Because I used to do athletics. And I remember waking up at 4 in the morning, packing my bag. My mom had to wake up earlier than that to make my breakfast for me and lunch. I used to take my packed lunch, get my running shoes, put it all in my bag and catch the bus to school so that I would get there by 5 o'clock. And then from 5 to 7, I would train. I'd sweat myself out and train. You know what? So I could run faster. Horses can do that from day one. So I'm aspiring, me back then was aspiring to do what animals do from day one. What was human about me? So that I could become a champion. Got nothing against sports, by the way. You need to keep your physical fitness, but that's what you need, physical fitness, not a trophy. You're physically fit. Well, you need a trophy for that as well. Isn't your fitness the trophy that you deserve? Well, you need someone to give you a certificate to say that you're fit. And put a medal around your neck. What's that for? I used to train so that I could jump as far as possible. That's what I was training for. Every single day, every single weekday, I'd go to school at 5 in the morning and train until 7:30. Or 7 o'clock, so I could get myself a wash, have something to eat, and then join classes at 8. And you know what? What else? After school, I'd stay behind for badminton. So I could use a racket and hit a shuttle up into the air, as high up as I possibly could. That's what I was training for. And so I could use my racket and slam a shuttlecock onto the ground, which by convention had to be on the other side of the net. That was mere convention. Someone else decided all the rules and I was playing their game. You think it made me happier? Like truly, inside of me, do you think I ever found happiness doing that? But I won all the trophies. I won the medals. I won all that. But back to square one. Nothing achieved. Here are the two things, the only two things you need now that you are human beings. If you believe this, take it. If you don't, leave it. One, look after your bodies. Keep it safe. Keep it fit. Keep it healthy. Two, look after your minds. Give it the Dhamma. That's it. Anything and everything else is a waste of time. If you give yourselves the Dhamma, you will also become a better person to everyone living around you. That's why I said the best service you can do to humanity, not just the society, to humanity. Arahatan Vahanse spreads loving compassion not just to his family. He doesn't have one. As it says in Sanskrit, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. In other words, the whole world is my family. He doesn't separate individuals. My mother, my father, my brother. These are the people I love. Everyone else, who cares? No. To him, everyone is his family. So he spreads love and compassion equally to all. Boundless, limitless, unselfish. It's not self-centered. Nothing to gain out of it. Just to give. No coming back. He doesn't want anything back now. Because he has become God. Folks, I want you to aspire to that greatness. This is the pinnacle of your lives. Don't fall halfway. Now you've started on that journey, haven't you? All of you have. You've started to climb up this mountain. Reach the top. Because if you're doing with anything, if it's worth doing, do it to the best of your ability. Otherwise, as I say, don't do it at all. Don't bother. You're wasting your time, you're wasting the teacher's time, and so on. But whatever you do, do it to the best of your ability. The best of your ability will be different to someone else's ability. That is granted. I take that. No problem about that. But, please do something with your lives. For your sake. Not for mine. For your sake. Because nothing else will matter. Yes, fulfill your duties and responsibilities. And the more you practice the Dhamma, the better a mother you will be. Always. Look at this mother. What do you have to say about her? 2 months. You think now she cares less about her child? You think she cares less about her husband? You think she cares less about you? Do you see the gratefulness and the gratitude that she has? Look at what the Dhamma has done for her. Gratitude and gratefulness was the first thing I talked to you about in the first sermon I did, the first or the second sermon. Let's always be grateful. But once you become less self-centered, once you become less ego-centered, and the whole world becomes you and you become the whole world, you become one with nature, now your presence is a blessing to all. Your presence is a blessing. That's why we call him the Bhagyatun Mahansi. He's a blessing. He's the blessed one. What that means is, his presence is a blessing to all. Why can't yours be? Don't settle for less than that, because you're a human being. You can understand all of this. Every word makes sense to you, right? Is there a single word I've said to you that didn't make sense to you? To any of you? If you stayed awake and alert throughout this sermon, you would have understood every word I said. But today you can. Because you have the intelligence to understand, you have your faculties in full working order, you have the ability, the intellect and all that to understand, you have your teachers to thank for teaching you the language, you have my teachers to thank for teaching me the language, you have my teachers to thank for teaching me the Dhamma so that I can convey these messages to you. All that. We are always grateful. We are grateful for the people who laid down the chairs so you could come and sit here. The people who operate the lifts. The people who clear the car park so you can come and park and look after your vehicles while you're here. Always grateful for that. The gentleman who always comes and sets up the microphone for us and make sure that the place is in spick and span order so that you can come here and listen to the Dhamma. I personally invited him to next week's program. Personally. I didn't personally invite any of you, but it is he who makes it possible for you all to come and be here. So it's my duty to invite him personally. I said, if you have time next week, sir, all of our guests will be arriving at Rajagiri. It is you who has made all this possible with your help. Otherwise, we couldn't have done any of this. Because I was there when the chairman of the organization, the principal of the school, spoke to this gentleman. I was there when it happened. And he said, look after them. Be good to them. Make sure that everything is in working order and they're all comfortable when they get here. And he said, yes, sir. I will do everything in my power to do so. From that day, without fail. See, aren't we grateful? So the more we understand the Dhamma, what? We become less grateful? No. I can talk to you till tomorrow about just the people who have helped us do this program at Rajagiriya, not every other thing. Till tomorrow, I can tell you all the good things that all the good people have been doing just to make this possible. Just to make today's sermon possible, not last week. I can talk to you till tomorrow. And not saying the same thing twice. So gratefulness does not go out the window when wisdom comes in the door. It doesn't work that way. Because we become a blessing to everyone around us. So, this is the transformation I expect to see in all of you, ladies and gentlemen. This is the pirikara that I wish for you to offer to me. That pirikara I will ask for. Nothing else I ask for. This one I will ask for. Introduce someone to the teaching. Because that is the best gift you will ever given him their entire lives. There is nothing in this world, in this universe, that you can compare to the truth, because it is only the truth that gives them happiness, nothing else. By then, everything that money can buy and then some, they will still come back tomorrow asking you, how do I be happy? They will. But give them the Dhamma and take everything else away from them. They'll come back tomorrow and tell you, you don't need those things that you took from me. You can keep it, but I want to thank you for giving me the gift that has liberated me. May the Dhamma heal you. May it do what it has done for me and what it is doing for me. May it do it for you sooner rather than later. May it do this to you while you are still alive in this birth. That's what I want. So that you can continue to be a blessing to everyone around you. So that your families will experience the bliss that you will be taking back home to them, folks. That's why I say, you will automatically become a better mother. I promise you that. So don't you ever worry whether becoming here is going to make you a worse mother. You're going to stop worrying about your children, concerning yourselves about your children, caring about your children or your husband. No, that's not going to waste. That's not how it works. You will become less self-centered. You'll care less about what you want, leaving you room and space and time to think about what really matters to the people around you. Because when you are so self-centered, how can you care about other people? When you are drowning, do you care whether the person next to you, on whose shoulders you are going to climb on to save your life, is going to drown? You don't care at that moment because you can't. You're vexing. You can't. As long as the mind is vexing, it does not have the freedom, the space to think about someone else. That's why those who heal themselves with the Dhamma become a healer for others as well. Just a reminder for next week. So you know that next week we have the meditation retreat at the monastery. It's going to be a one-day session. So we expect to receive you by 8. You can come in earlier than that, but we'll start the program at 8. So if you come in earlier, then you can make yourselves comfortable, use the washrooms, whatever. So I would advise you come in at least maybe half an hour before, 45 minutes before, it's fine. And then we'll have the program till around 5:30, that sort of time. There will be a few things I would like you to bring with you just to make your stay comfortable. On the day, you will be observing Sil. So we'll be giving you the 10 precepts, Dasa Sil. Most of you will have observed Pansil all your lives, the 5 precepts. Some of you will have, well, at least observed. You'll have observed the Atasil, the 8 precepts. Maybe a very few of you might have observed the 10 precepts. The 10 precepts are the equivalent of what a Samanera monk observes. So when you ordain, these are the precepts that we take on as a Samanera. But once you go on to become a bhikkhu, you have 227. So don't worry about that. But if you work out all the nuances of each of those precepts, I think they amount to like 100,000, if not more, with all the nuances. But in short, we have 227 precepts as bhikkhus. So you will be observing the 10 precepts, and it would be good if you could come dressed in a Uthuru Saluva. Is there anyone who does not know what an Uthuru Saluva is, and you're intending to come next week? If there is, then just please speak to the organizers, and they can explain to you what an Uthuru Saluva is. It's just a piece of cloth you wear over your shoulder. It's a sign of modesty, if nothing else. Because there's a certain decorum we like to maintain whenever we are in a place of worship. So an Uthuru Saluva would be good. So please bring that. And also a water bottle. We try to minimize the amount of plastic we use at the monastery because the only mark we want to leave on this planet is healed hearts and mended minds. That's the only mark we want to leave in this planet. We don't want to leave plastic behind. So if you can bring one of your water bottles, like the water bottle which is refillable bottles, then you can get the water from the monastery, fill your water bottles up. You know, maybe bring a reasonable sized bottle. Don't bring those 20 liter ones. No one's going to carry them around for you. But bring a reasonably sized water bottle so you don't have to keep going back to refill it. Right? Maybe, you know, 1 liter, 1.5 liter, something like that. Just enough to keep you going. Please bring with you, now I think this is pretty obvious, but I'll mention it nonetheless. Bring with you a napkin, which you will need when you will especially be using it, taking your meals, so you don't spill your food on your clothes and soil them. Sorry, I know that's pretty obvious. Or you think we are kids, Swami Nahansa? But that's why I just gave the sermon about kids. So a napkin and, you know, handkerchiefs, whatever. Don't bring anything you're not going to need on the day. So please don't bring your Rolex. We have plenty of clocks at the monastery if you need to watch the time. Because, you know, what I don't want, and it's never happened at the monastery, and I'm very proud of that, nothing has ever gone missing at the monastery thus far. Because people like that, they don't walk through our gates. If they do, they can't stay there. Because the environment is such that only good lasts. Only good survives. All badness and evil, they run out of the door. Nothing has ever been lost so far, and I'd like to maintain it that way. So please don't bring anything that might tempt someone. Or actually, it might not even tempt someone. You might lose it out of your own negligence. And then, and the unfortunate thing is, when you don't know the whereabouts of it, usually ignorance and attachment will tell you, someone took it. Yeah, always someone. So chances are that's what would happen. You'd think that someone's taken it, and then from that point forward, you know, let's say you observe precepts at 9 o'clock or whatever time, you go for alms, and then from that point forward, you're missing your wallet. It's not there. Your Rolex is gone missing. Your expensive shoes that you brought into the monastery, it's gone missing. Right? And then you wonder who's taken it. I did tell you that we have a few dogs. So please don't bring dog food. Right? So please don't bring your expensive footwear. I mean, whatever you normally come in is fine. It's a civil place. Okay, if you've been there, you know it. You know there's a safe place to put your gear. But, you know, just bring what is necessary. That's it. And nothing more. If you can come in your sandals, even better. You don't have to, just saying. Please bring a notebook and pen. It might be handy. You don't have to, again, these are optional items, because it might be that during a talk, you might have a question or two. And rather than interrupting the Swami Nahansa during the talk, it would be good if you can just note it down, because we are trying to, don't hold me to this yet, we are trying to organize it so that, like I said, I expected 5 of you and now I have 115 to deal with. Right, so we are trying to work out the numbers. How do we get enough Swami Nuhansays and the Anagarika Mahatmyas to sit down with you and have your conversations? So we are trying to organize it in such a way that if you requested a one-on-one discussion, you get some time with someone. If you haven't, then you get to sit in a group chat, so that you can ask your questions about the sermon that was done or any other questions that might be relevant to your practice. Right? We're trying to organize that. So there may be questions that you might wish to raise at that point. So for that, please come with a notebook and a pen so you can take them down and, you know, make your own remarks as you go through the day, so that you have something to reflect on when you get back home. That will be useful. Now, we've also brought in a few sheets of paper today, so if there were anyone who was not present last week, they can put their names down. If you were here last week, you needn't put your names down again, so we got that from last week. But if you weren't here last week and you wish to come to this retreat on the 4th of February, which is a Sunday, that is Independence Day next week, then please put your names down. And if you are a doctor, please try to pretend that you are not one when you write your name down on that. Because half of those names were not legible. So, you know, we were thinking that we could work out whether you are male or female by looking at the name. And we were wrong. So next time round, we are not going to make that mistake. We will have a box so you can indicate your gender, as we have done today. Because your name is not a giveaway, because I cast the names, we couldn't read. It's like prescription script. That's okay, we can work out the numbers, it's fine. And there's also an online form that has been made available on Google. The link has been shared in the WhatsApp group, which I think most of you, if not all of you, are members of. Once again, you don't need to fill that form in if you have already submitted your names on the paper sheet. In fact, I could ask you to do me a favor, because that's a message we should have put when we posted the form online, which only came back later. If you've done both of these, in other words, you put your names down on the paper forms, but you also submitted the online form, can you please inform that to one of our Anagarika Mahathayas so that they can just take a note of your name and strike it out from one of the lists? Because we need that for numbers to work out how many of you are coming, to have the venues ready as well as to have our people ready to deliver the programs. Okay, because I think there were some of you who've submitted both of these, put your name on the forms and did the online forms as well. It slipped our mind to put a note in there to say, if you've done the paper form, you needn't do the online form. So if you can do that, that would be great. And one last thing, this, if you've forgotten everything else from today's sermon, please remember this. Please get sufficient sleep the night before. Because we are not going to be practicing Nirodha Samapatti on Sunday, which is where you stop everything, you shut down. Right? We are doing Samma Samadhi, not Samma sleeping. Okay? Because the previous night is a Saturday. Right? And Saturday nights are, you know what they are. Right? You're going to be busy. You might have friends around, right? Whatever, but I recommend that you give yourselves enough sleep, whatever is enough for you. I'd say at least, you know, between 6 to 7, if not 8 hours of sleep, if you can afford that. Please give yourselves enough sleep so you don't come the following day and you start counting sheep. Because we don't have sheep at the monastery, and we'll be quite surprised why you're counting sheep. Because the Swaminarayan says, and our Anagarika Mahatmyas, you know, they're going to give their 100%, I can promise and vouch for that. They're going to be doing that. We just want to offer you independence on Independence Day. But for that, you have to be awake, you have to be alert, you have to be able to hear everything that is said and practice at the same time. So there'll be times for you to meditate. If you haven't rested the previous night, you will default to what you understand as meditation and you'll shut your eyes. And once you shut your eyes, then what you're used to doing when you shut your eyes will come to you as by default. But that is not what you're there for, is it? So, if you forget everything, if you've forgotten everything from what I've been saying for the last, 2.5 hours or so, remember this, if you're coming to next week's session, please give yourselves enough rest the previous day. Don't stay up late into the night, just so excited and happy about the following morning. Okay? Because that can happen as well, right? You're really excited about the following morning, you find it difficult to fall asleep. Let's not do that. Let's get excited on Sunday. Right? No excitement necessary on the previous day. Right. Let's conclude for today. Let's transfer the merits and bring today's sermon to a close. Okay, first and foremost then, let us all take this moment to transfer all the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, inviting the Swaminarayan to deliver the sermon, listening to the sermon, as well as creating a conducive environment for many to come along, listen to the Dhamma, practice the Dhamma, and aspire to the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves and be grateful for the good work done by the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. That is, also transfer these merits to the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. That is, also transfer these merits to my teacher, Guru Swami Nuhansay, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarik and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by chance retreating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to the friends of the monastery, our devotees, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha and provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, as well as pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employees, our teachers, as well as everyone and anyone who's taken any effort to bring us, to help us, support and assist us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to protect and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana, as well as the deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they all prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have passed away in our name, our loved ones, our ancestors, our forefathers, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to walk the path, practice the Dhamma and aspire to the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. With gratitude in our hearts, let us transfer all these merits to them. Let us also transfer these merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as friends and foe who would have lost their lives in battles fought and the wars that have prevailed in our lands. Let us also transfer these merits to those who lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, blizzards, storms, floods and pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinite long journey of samsara, they will all have at some point been a mother to us, a father to us, a friend to us, an acquaintance to us, someone to share our sorrows with. Out of gratitude, gratefulness and humility towards all of them, and with loving kindness and compassion, let us spread all the merits that we have all acquired to all of them. May these merits permeate to all of them, spread far and wide and reach them and help heal them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May these merits help to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may you and I and everyone who's helped make this program a success become a Rahatan Vahanse or an Arahat Teranin Vahanse in this very life itself, and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you now.
Raga ginnen midatnva Dvesha ginnen midatnva Moha ginnen midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Mamadasyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetva Raga gini niveva Desha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva
Thunruvange suvisi ananta maha guna belin Sila loka sila satyam Nibbana parama sukhen suvita taravetva Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.